The next negative sense RNA virus group that we're going to talk about is the group that has rabies, the rhabdoviruses. Again, this is a negative sense helical RNA virus. Rabies is transferred by the bite of an animal that is infected with rabies. It could be dogs, cats, bats, skunks, etc. This particular disease is extremely dangerous. There are some different guidelines for treatment in rabies. For instance, if the next door neighbor's dog would bite you and that dog has been vaccinated, it has current tags, and you are bitten fairly badly, then the only precaution that you would take would be possibly a tetanus shot. You would not have to have a rabies shot. If this dog was a dog in the neighborhood and it had not been vaccinated, but you found the dog and they put the dog up for 2 weeks and it did not develop rabies, then again, you would not have to be vaccinated. The case of where you always have to be vaccinated is if you don't capture the animal. If you do not catch that animal, then you're going to have to take the rabies vaccine. The vaccine is dead virus. You also, if the bite was very serious, they may also give antibody shots, which is passive rabies immunity, in and around the area of where the bite occurred. Let's suppose that the neighbor's dog, the dog down the street, hadn't been vaccinated, and in 2 or 3 days after you were bitten, it started to have problems. The physician, the county health department, thinks that maybe the dog does have rabies. It is acting a little funny, it's acting strange, etc. They actually would take this dog and they would kill it. They would cut the head off and they would send it to the state health department. And at the state health department, there would be a procedure done in which you stain that tissue to find the Negri bodies. This slide shows you a Negri body, two Negri bodies inside of this cell. Here is a Negri body there. That confirms that dog having rabies, and as a result, you will have to take the vaccine. You will have to take the dead virus vaccine and maybe antibody. Here is the bullet-shaped rabies virus. The filovirus is a group that we're not going to spend any time on. We currently don't have much problem with it. We better hope that we never have any problem with it. The Marburg virus and the Ebola virus causes acute hemorrhagic fever and very quick death. The Ebola virus, we certainly don't want that to crop up. There are a few cases in Africa, and we certainly don't want that organism to start getting spread. The next group of negative sense RNA viruses is the influenza virus. This shows you an influenza virus attached to a red blood cell membrane. This is actually a hemagglutination test. The orthomyxovirus is the influenza virus, and you will see that its genome is divided into 8 segments. It has a separate hemagglutinin that's necessary for attachment to the cells and entry. It has a neuraminidase, which is necessary for exit from the cells. There is a great vaccine for this that we take every year. I guess it's really not a great vaccine because we have to take it every year, but it's dead virus. It usually consists of H1N1, that's hemagglutinin number 1, neuraminidase number 1, that is a virus itself, H3N2 plus B. There is actually influenza A, B, and C, but it is A and B that cause most of the problems to us. These influenzas have the ability, since they have 8 pieces of genome, they have the ability to mutate. They may mutate very slightly. If they mutate very slight, this is a small antigenic change. This is called genetic drift or anagenic drift. The real problem with this is when a human is infected with a human type A rabies, human type A influenza virus, and an animal type A influenza virus. Because then you have 16 pieces of genetic information in one cell. Recombination is going to occur, and you're going to have a major shift in the genetic mechanism, and we may have a brand new virus that is produced. This is how we get worldwide epidemics and pandemics from influenza. It's been a long time since one of those has happened, but you never know when that's going to happen. Again, it is usually a human A influenza and an animal A influenza that gets into the human, into one cell, and all of the genetic reassortment occurs. The drug for treating influenza is called amantadine. Obviously, the best treatment is to be precautionary, take a prophylactic dead organism shot when it's available each November of the year. We have one more group of RNA viruses, and this is a virus that is quite different. It is the rotavirus group, and it is unique because it is double-stranded RNA. This is the only time that we've got double-stranded RNA virus. The rotavirus is segmented, and this particular virus causes diarrhea, particularly in young individuals. If the individual is less than 2 years old with prolonged diarrhea, very likely it is rotavirus. We're now going to spend some time talking about oncogenic virus groups. Oncogenic viruses are ones that have the potential to cause cancer. I would like to say that this set of notes is adequate for your information for the boards. Pathology probably has more information, and if you want to expand on these notes a little bit by reading some of your notes from pathology, that might help you out. But I think this amount of information is adequate for what the board expects you to know. What is a malignant cell? A malignant cell that is one that has de-differentiated. It has an altered morphology. It has an altered growth pattern. It has lost its growth control. It may have 2 or 3 or 4 times or more DNA synthesis than normal. A malignant or a transformed cell has become immortalized. That means it can grow continuously. It just can keep being cultured. A lot of malignant cells have new antigens that they put up on their surface. As we go through this material, there is a series of definitions that you certainly should be familiar with. What is a provirus? A provirus is a virus that has inserted into our own DNA, and the best example for that is HIV. That virus, the positive sense RNA, had a reverse transcriptase that converted it to DNA, and that DNA was inserted into our chromosomes. Oncogenes. Oncogenes are genes with the potential to cause malignant transformation. They can be cellular or they can be viral. Let's talk about cellular oncogenes. These are normal cellular genes that control and regulate our cell growth. I don't think it's necessary for you to learn all of the cellular genes. You certainly should maybe be familiar with, by seeing one of them, you know that it is a cellular oncogene. If it has the letter small c, that means it's one of our normal cellular components. It could be CIS, S-I-S, which regulates growth factors. It could be SARC, S-R-C, which regulates tyrosine kinase. It could be MYC, which regulates DNA binding protein. It could be RAS, which regulates G proteins. It could be ERB, which regulates cell receptors. These are normal cellular genes that regulate a growth pattern. If those start getting turned on, then we have the potential for malignancy. There are also viral ONC genes. These are abbreviated VONC, standing for virus ONC genes. They can cause cancer. A couple of different viral ONC genes are E6 and E7. These genes are involved in the synthesis of proteins E6 and E7. Now, let's make sure that we understand what a tumor suppressor gene is. Tumor suppressor genes are anti-ONC genes. One of these is P53. Another one is P105RB. That means that P53 and P105RB actually control the growth and replication, etc., of our normal cellular ONC genes. So if our CIS or our MYC or our RAS get overturned on, they are regulated to slow down by our tumor suppressor genes, the anti-ONC genes. A mutation in some of these genes can cause a major problem. Let's look at the term translocation. Translocation occurs sometimes in Epstein-Barr virus. This is a translocation of a c-MYC. Now that is a normal cellular MYC gene. It is normally on chromosome 8. If it moves to chromosome 14, it gets turned on, overproduces. As a result, we end up with Burkitt's lymphoma. So we can have a translocation of a gene to an unusual place, and it may result in a tumor. Proteins E6 and E7, they are produced as a result of human papillomavirus, and these proteins eventually can cause a very serious carcinoma of the cervix. These are normally regulated by P53 and P110 or 15RB. But if there is a change in the activity of P53 or P110RB, then the E6 and E7 may overproduce. It is certainly important that you understand that there are some viruses that are associated with human cancer. Epstein-Barr virus, Burkitt's lymphoma, we told you that was a translocation, nasopharyngeal carcinoma, chronic hepatitis B and hepatitis C may cause carcinoma of the liver, HPV, HPV 16 and 18 may cause cervical carcinoma, HTLV-1 may cause adult T-cell leukemia. These are some examples of human cancers that are known associated with different kinds of viral organisms. If you look at table 5.15, there is a discussion of prions. Prions are very controversial proteins. They have no genetic background, no mechanism. They're only proteins. But they may, by some people's determinations, cause some very serious human diseases. Other people think them very controversial. We have some examples of scrapie in sheep, CJ disease in humans, Kuru in humans. These are prion diseases. It takes years for them to develop, and they end up with being some sort of dementia-type condition. Let's spend just a little bit of time on some changes in viral genetics. If you will go to figure 5.32, we have a definition. This definition is called phenotypic mixing. In my notes, I have these viruses colored. It might be an advantage to you to color these viruses. The virus on the far left, maybe color it all red. Color the capsid red and the genome red. The virus next to it, color it all blue. The capsid blue and the genome blue. So this virus, the red virus and the blue virus, infect the same cell. What happens? Well, now you're well aware that the first thing that happens in viral replication is the production of early proteins. They're enzymatic. The second thing that happens is the production of genomes. If you will look to the right, I want you in the first cell to the right, in the first virus to the right, I want you to color the genome red. In the second cell, I want you to color the genome blue. But what I want you to do is I want you to mix the capsid up. Have one little segment red and one little segment blue, another segment red, another segment blue, etc. That's what phenotypic mixing is. It results in proteins on the surface are a mixture. They're a mixture of the A and B. Now the genome, the red genome or the blue genome, is always going to produce red or blue, but the capsids may hook up differently. That's what phenotypic mixing is. Now let's look and see what phenotypic masking is. Again, I want you to color the cell on the left red. The cell next to it, the virus next to it, I want you to color it blue. Then we go to the next virus. I want you to color the genome red and the capsid blue. And the last virus on the right, I want you to color the genome blue and the capsid red. Let me repeat that. On the left, the virus is all red. The next virus is all blue. The third virus is red genome, blue capsid. The next virus is blue genome, red capsid. Now let's look and see what phenotypic masking is. Two viruses infect the same cell. The capsids of proteins of virus A form around the nucleic acid of virus B. So that appears to be virus B, but it is actually the nucleic acid of virus A. Complementation. What is an example of complementation? That is where you have defective viruses. A good example of this would be hepatitis B and hepatitis D. Hepatitis D requires hepatitis B before it can cause its effect. So this is an example of complementation, and there are many examples of this. The last thing on figure 36 shows you genetic shift. Now we mentioned that a moment ago in influenza virus. We told you that the human virus A and an animal virus A gets in the same cell. And as a result of those 16 pieces of genetic information, we have a brand new virus that is formed, and on the surface of that virus, we have a different little molecule. Look at the little triangle in your notes. You'll see that that came from the animal, but the rest of it is human. As a result of that, we have very poor immunity in the population, and that is liable to start an epidemic or a pandemic around the world, and that is called genetic shift. The next definition is genetic drift. A genetic drift is minor genetic changes. It might be in the hemagglutinin, it might be in the neuraminidase, and it may result in several people getting influenza depending on the amount of immunity and the amount of change that's done in that minor genetic drift. I would caution you to go back in your viral studies and study the different groups, making sure that you know HIV, hepatitis B, and herpes. There are others that are important. Rabies is important. Influenza is important. Parainfluenza is important. Parvoviruses are important. Certainly HPV is important. But as you organize yourselves, be sure and understand the structure of these viruses. Now, I will tell you one thing that's in your great big favor. The boards used to ask viral structure and you match it up with the virus. Rarely do they do that anymore. They give you a clinical case. So they will have a clinical case describing herpes. And in that clinical case of herpes, they may say this virus was found to be double-stranded, DNA, enveloped. So if you happen to know that herpes is that, then this is going to be helpful to you in figuring out the clinical question. I guess what I'm trying to say is you could get the clinical question right without knowing viral structure, but it's much more easier to figure it out if you do know viral structure.